Hello, hello, hello. Welcome all to the Lit Podcast. My name's Oliver.
My name's Jenna.
And today we're going to be talking about T.S. Eliot and his famous poem, The Wasteland. Now, before we get into any of that, let's talk about his background a little bit.
All right, so our poet is T.S. Eliot, and no, not Taylor Swift Eliot, or related, probably not. Anyway, so that's his full name. He was born in St. Louis, Missouri in 1888. And he was actually born from a New England family, and they moved to Missouri right after he was born. And there's a lot of stereotypical roles in society at this time. And so, like, a lot of men grew up to become businessmen. But Eliot didn't receive any of that, like, pressure to follow in his father's footsteps and become a businessman. Instead, he gave him a wide range of education, and Eliot actually ended up going to Harvard University for college in 1906, and he received his bachelor degrees in only 3 years. And then after college, he moved to England in 1914 when he was 25, and he ended up meeting his wife there, and he settled and started a job there. And when he was 39, he became an official British subject and abandoned his American citizenship. And he eventually became known as a British poet, essayist, publisher, playwright, literary critic, editor, and the leader of the modernist movement in poetry from his works such as The Wasteland, which is what we're going to be analyzing.
Yeah, I think his the way he was brought up and his education really was the biggest reason why he was such a modernist and why his works came out the way they did.
Yes.
Now, we're going to talk about his influence and who influenced him. Now, George Santayana, who's a philosopher and a poet, as well as Irving Babbitt, who was a literary critic, both inspired Eliot to become interested in British work, as it was an anti-romantic type of literature. In addition, this leads to him becoming an assistant in philosophy at Harvard in 1909. His last 2 years of college, Eliot traveled to France, where he attended lectures in philosophy and studied English poetry and French symbolism, which then helped him find his own style of writing. His career started taking off after he published The Love Song of Alfred Prufrock, which is quite the poem, and as it later came to represent English modernism. It has very intense themes about, like, fate and finding yourself in society, and Prufrock is a very interesting character. After this publication, however, he initially became a French and Latin teacher for a year, as well as a bank clerk, while also working as a prolific reviewer, an essayist in literary criticism and philosophy. I feel like nowadays it's also pretty hard to, like, be someone in literature because, you know, you gotta make money and provide for yourself. So, just like many others in society, Eliot had to work separate jobs while just he was trying to work out his passion. And in 1922, Eliot's career became internationally recognized due to his published work, The Wasteland, which is his most famous poem. And it's really long.
So it's interesting that after The Love Song, after he wrote that, that's when his career, like, took off, but he wasn't necessarily famous right after that. Like, people knew him, but then he didn't become, like, internationally recognized until The Wasteland. And I think it's interesting that he kind of went back to his normal life of, like, being a bank clerk and just, like, an average person while, like, having this essayist, literary criticism and philosophy, like, thing on the side.
And I think him having to be other jobs and do other professions and kind of just be, like, a basic person in society is a reason why a lot of his poems have, like, themes about trying to break out of the social norms and maybe become someone more important or someone more creative in society.
Yeah, I think it definitely influenced his work, too.
Mm-hmm. So now we're going to talk about his literary period, which is the early 20th century, and how that affected some of his work. Like, his biggest, the reason why he's famous is because he is a modernist poet, and modernism is highlighting and responding to changes in society at his time. Now, many of the poets around his time and before it, they were writing about old-timey stuff, and that's why the term is called modernism. because during this time period was focused on materialism, which is purchasing useless but trendy items. Also at this time, there were major conflicts between world powers, and the most influential war, World War I, occurred during this time. There were many effects of World War I, and more than just effects on the countries itself, or territory, or anything like that. There were effects on the people that were in it, such as PTSD, because there were many severe accidents that happened in the war, and lots of death, and destruction, and chaos. But, J.D. Salinger, for example, was someone in the war, and he created a bleak novel with dark themes, which became very popular shortly after serving in World War II. And an example like that shows the effects that the war had on people during the time period. Also, T.S. Eliot's poems, since he was a part of the war, not like on the front lines, but still saw the effects of it, his poems also outwardly expressed his thoughts about the world. They weren't like meant to express his thoughts, but since they were so influential on him, they kind of shined through. And one of the most famous poems, The Wasteland, which again is what we're going to be talking about, has tons of themes about World War I, PTSD, and how he was brought up.
Yes, and before we get into major themes, I just want to talk a little bit about his historical background, which you covered a lot of that already, but after he finished his studies in Europe, he was initially meant to return to Harvard University to complete his final exam for his PhD degree, but World War One actually intervened at the time he was supposed to return, so he never was able to make it back, and he just remained in Europe, and then that's probably why he, like, abandoned his American citizenship, like I said earlier. But it's World War One actually led to the publication of The Wasteland. So I just thought that was like an interesting thing because, as we know, like PTSD and war is one of the themes in The Wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
And then his major themes in writing, not only the Wasteland, but his like other famous poems like Ten Ash Wednesday, Nine Jurton, and The Wasteland, obviously. Major themes include the damaged psyche of humanity. Like many modernist writers, Eliot wanted his poetry to express the fragile philosophical state of humanity in the 20th centuries, and he was one of the first to express modern themes in his works.
Yeah, I feel like during that time period, it was really hard for people to express how they feel and what their mental issues really were. So It was really big that T.S. Eliot could get out the information and really explain to people what it's like.
Yeah, which probably is why he became so internationally like famous for his poems.
Yeah.
All right. So we're getting into The Wasteland now.
The Wasteland is very long by poem standards.
Split into five sections.
Yes. Now, each section has like different themes, but they also have like little segments and symbols that correlate with one another to make the poem flow. But let's just get into it.
All right.
We have part one, The Burial of the Dead. Now, the poem starts off with a really dark tone, talking about nature and the seasons, and how April, the month of April, is one of the worst times of the year.
Yeah.
And it also talks about winter, and the symbol of winter in this poem is that the snow cast by winter and just lays on the ground is almost like hiding the remains of war and death and tragedy by just like putting a blanket over it and saving it for another time.
Mm-hmm.
And that also,
the metaphor that's known, like the white blanket of snow, is like a metaphor that he uses to like bring that out.
Yeah. It also talks about, in part one, a Phoenician sailor with pearl eyes. Now, the importance of the Phoenician sailor, which we see later on in the poem, is that he was a daring sailor who had hopes of changing his fate in the world and becoming important to society. However, he tragically died and is a symbol of how many others who try and change their fate, such as T.S. Eliot himself, have suffered and failed eventually.
Mm-hmm. And then this becomes one of the major themes, like especially highlighted towards the end of it. But the first part is just giving you like background that there's a sailor, and there's also a fortune teller in the first part who has like these cards, and one of the I think they all represent different people in the poem, and one of the cards is the Phoenician sailor, so it's kind of like foreshadowing that he's going to have some significance as the poem moves on.
Yes.
And then there is a card that she draws, and it's actually blank, and it to quote it, it says, which is blank, is something he carries on his back, which I am forbidden to see. So that means like she could, she can't see whatever is in this person's like brain because it's hidden. And I think that's showing that we all have like our demons, and that could just be like another theme to the poem. Like you can't see, like completely know somebody because they're like usually always hiding something in the back of their mind.
Yeah. And how like you can't ever really get to know somebody because there's always something that they're hiding from you.
Mm-hmm.
Then it talks a lot about corpses and ghosts and like mourning in London. London is one of the many settings in this poem. And I think that can all be related to the PTSD of war and having flashbacks and seeing ghosts of like the people that you knew that died in war. Because this poem was published right after World War I.
Mm-hmm. And then the first part actually ends with, there's like a dead corpse in a garden. And it says like, has it begun to sprout? So I'm thinking that the dead corpse like symbolizes the PTSD that like that whoever this person is like going through. And then it's like, has it begun to sprout? Like, has your like PTSD like begun to like expand and like start up again or something like that compared like with the war?
Mm-hmm. All right, now we're gonna go into segment two, which is called A Game of Chess. Now the name of it is actually really important because chess is a major symbol in this poem. Chess basically in this poem can be boiled down to how there's pawns on the board and how there's like a person that's controlling them. Now, in segment two, there's multiple women that are described who are going through moral dilemmas during, like, different time periods. But it all boils down to the inside of the woman's head. They're almost playing chess and trying to outwit each other and come up with, like, a solution to their problems.
Yeah, and chess is actually an internal game of, like, trying to find power within yourself. And, like, as we've seen in a lot of T.S. Eliot poems, it's, like, him trying to, like him not knowing himself. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, these women don't know themselves, and chess is, like, them trying to figure out who they are. It's, like, this internal, like, strategizing thing that they're going through.
Now, there's other parts of this segment, which is when the woman is talking about her husband, who is returning from war, and how they don't want to be dependent on their husband, who also has mental issues because of the war, and they'd rather be like a self-dependent woman in society, but they're having a mental problem, like a mental dilemma during this segment, which mm-hmm. is how the chess kind of comes into play.
Yes, I agree with that. And you can see, like, in this part also, throughout the poem, there's a lot of, like, stereotypical things, like, with women. And one of the, like, quotes, it says, others can pick and choose if you can't. It's kind of like, other people will tell you how to be if you can't decide for yourself. So that's, like, another theme of, like, self-discovery that was highlighted in the second part.
Another thing that's related to chess is that during the segment with the woman, in all caps, it keeps saying, hurry up, please, it's time, which can be related to, like, how the woman wants to come to a decision and is really, like, trying hard in her head to come up with the best decision in her life. But, and sort of how it works in chess is that you're timed based on how fast you can make moves. And I think the little hurry up, please, it's time is, like, her internal clock saying, you don't have a lot of time. You need to make a decision now.
Yeah, before the men return home from war. Because then, like, right after the last time it says, hurry up, please, it's time, it says, like, good night, ladies. like ladies two times with no men, so like clearly like the men are still away at war, but like she needs to make a decision before they get back on like how she wants to go about the rest of her life.
And many of the stuff in segment two comes back in the later segments. All right, segment three, the fire sermon. Now, fire is like in this segment is kind of depicted as a cleanse of sin, sort of, because the people who are and like the buildings that are set fire are like taken back by nature once they're completely burned, and it's sort of seen as like nature returning after war and after tragedy to as a sort of cleanse to the world.
Yes, and then this one also talks about a river. It's called the Thames River, and so the setting is in England. And I think the first two other sections, one of them was in Germany, I think.
Yes, and it also talks about Greece a little bit.
And then France was the last section, because the women was like, well, T.S. Eliot put like French in his poem or something, like, because he's, you know, known for putting different languages, which also shows how experienced he is, like, in Europe and where he's been.
There's it also talks about the Unreal City, which is just, like, a made-up city, and I'll go further into detail later in the fifth segment when that really pops up.
Yeah, because that comes up multiple times, I believe.
Now, the river has a really big theme to it, which is how the river has tides and rapids that are pushing all the barges, which are just like flat boats that don't have a way to like propel themselves or change the course of where they're going. So the rapids of the river, as the barges just float along with it, they kind of just go with the river and don't have an option to kind of forge their own path on the river. And then it also brings up like other boats, not barges, with like heroic people on them who are trying to go against the river, against the rapids, who are trying to make their own destiny and be something else in life.
Yes, and these barges, obviously the first barges, they symbolize like the people who are just kind of going with the flow. But the tide of the river could also be like the tide in the war. I don't know, I think it could have multiple symbols. But yeah, the people, the barges are just going with the flow of like society. And then you have the people who are trying to go against society, which is like a major theme throughout. And I think the river also, like the journey through the river could also symbolize chess, because it's like strategic, like going through the river. It's like how all their lives are going on a certain strategic path, and like chess is all about strategy. So I think that that could also relate to chess. I don't know, it could be a stretch, but
also the people who are not on the barges, who are trying to go against the rapids, are following the bell sounds, which are bells from churches, and the churches in this poem symbolize salvation and like going to heaven. So I think what that's trying to say is that the people who are trying to make their own path in life are just trying to cleanse themselves and reach heaven and just like follow their own path, but it's very difficult for them because of how society is set up in this time period.
Yes, and the weather is also brought into this section again, like winter comes. I think it's interesting that the title would be the fire sermon when like winter is like kind of putting out the fire. And then after like the winter, it shows that I think the person, whoever is talking in this segment, his brother is killed in war, and so is his father. And then he thinks, oh, this is the fisherman. He's like actually at the river, and he thinks he like hears horns and motors behind him, but the horns and motors could actually like be a form of his PTSD of like war going on behind him, and like his past that's all behind him, which the fortune teller couldn't see in the beginning. So I think that that could be related to what she couldn't see, like his inner demons.
Yes. Also, chess is brought into this because In war, the soldiers that are on the ground fighting for their own countries are almost seen by the countries and, like, the upper people in those countries as pawns, which is how chess works. You have the person controlling the pawns, setting them up so that they can try and, like, take other pawns, and it's all just, like, it all... War in general just relates to chess, trying to outsmart your opponent and use your pawns to gain an upper hand. But the pawns in war are actual humans who all have their own lives, but it's just like it doesn't really matter during war because everyone is on the field and has a chance of dying.
Mm-hmm. There's also in this segment, there's like a lot in this segment, but a man named Tiresias assaults a woman, and she kind of, like, after the assault happens, like, he patronizes how she feels, and then he leaves, and she pretty much just, like, brushes it off, like, as if nothing happened. And then it says that she soothes her hair with her hand, just, like, almost like it's routine for her, and her purpose, like, in this time period is just to serve him, and she's not... Like, I think she wasn't really trying to break away from that role. Like, she's just used to, I don't know, it just seemed routine. Like, she's used to doing this and pleasing men.
Mm-hmm. And Tiresias, the old man, kind of says that he does, like, because it's from his perspective. He says that he assaults that person, and he kind of blames it on his past, because he says that he's been through a lot, and that can also be related to PTSD. As people who have gone to war have done, like, crazy things afterwards, and it can be boiled down to how, like, what happened to them in war and how it can come back and haunt them.
Yes. All right, I think that covers that section. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, also no. There was a line where it said he promised a new start, which also can be symbolic of, like, war has false promises. Like, and then it says, my people humble, people who expect nothing. I think that means, like, soldiers who fight, but, like, not for recognition. They're, like, fighting for the people.
Yeah.
And then also, like, the soldiers could be pawns in chess as well. Like, how you, like, they're very strategic and how they fight and things like that.
Yeah. All right. So now we're going to go on to segment 4, which is called Death by Water. And it goes in depth on the Phoenician sailor, which was brought up in segment 1 and a little bit in segment 2. But it explains how the sailor is a strong, burly man who tried changing his own fate and going his own path in life by sailing through the harsh ocean. And then he dies and is now just, it says that he's drowning in the water and just, like, floating through it, his dead corpse, which can also symbolize how, like, he tried to change his own fate, but he failed, and then he's just kind of, like, drifting in society, and just another, like, you know, just another person in society, not much that happened to him in his mm-hmm. life.
And then after his death, there's, like, this warning for Gentiles and Jews. And it was basically, like, saying, don't change who you are. You'll end up like this sailor who died. And the warning, I think the thunder, like, that comes in afterwards is, like, the warning from nature. Like, don't, like, mess with society and, like, don't try to change because you'll have the same fate as this person who died. And then there's mm-hmm. a line that says profit and loss. And I think that's talking about, like, the upper people in society who don't want the people to change, because it's, like, almost bittersweet that they're dead. Like, yeah, no one likes people being dead, but then it's also a profit because, like, this person was, like, trying to change, and we don't want that.
Mm-hmm. So the fourth section is shorter, so yeah. Let's just go on to the fifth section, which is called What the Thunder Said. Now, we discussed that the thunder, well, actually, the thunder has a second symbol, which we discussed was kind of like another thing of PTSD, mm-hmm. where thunder can be related to gunshots and chaos, because that's what it sounds like during war.
Yes. In multiple symbols.
So, the beginning of segment 5 talks about mountains, rocks, and water, which are all parts of nature and how they all correlate with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We decided that the rocks are symbolized as like just places without water. And when water gets into those areas, it withers away the rocks till they're gone, which is kind of symbolizing change.
Yeah, the water can represent like change and hope and like over time. Like it's basically saying that you can't like just change. It takes time to change. And certain things to happen, like how the sailor died, like they're going to go through things before they can finally find like salvation.
The rocks, they're described as like just being dry and chaotic because there's no like system to them. They're just like spread out unevenly, and there's mountains. And mountains can also be seen as obstacles because the city that it says that's like behind the mountains is could be interpreted as heaven, and you need to get past the mountains to get to heaven. And the mountains can be seen as like obstacles in life.
Mm-hmm. It also, in the beginning of this section, it refers back to the cards from section one. And I think what it's trying to say is, like, after all the trauma of, like, war, even if you're still alive, like, your mental state is decaying because of, like, your inner demons and your PTSD. And then that's when, like, the thunder comes in with, like, the gunshots and how... Oh, I also think it's interesting that the sailor died because of water. It was like death by water. But contrast to the mountains where there is no water, so there's like no changing in the mountains. I just think it's an interesting comparison of like he died because he had all of this water, all of this hope to like change. Whereas like people in the mountains don't have any water, but they can technically die because they don't have water. Kind of confusing, but I think that's what it's like getting at. Because water can have multiple purposes.
And then the poem ends off kind of weird with different languages, and like the thunder is apparently talking, which I think is supposed to mean, which is also just what the segment's called, what the thunder said. But I think it's talking about how the thunder, which we said represents like chaos and gunshots, and also what did it also represent?
Warning.
Warning. Yeah, it's like a warning call. So it's kind of going in depth about what the warning is and like how you can avoid the thunder, which is like the chaos.
And throughout this poem there's like a lot of shifts, but I think the biggest shift was right in this last section where it's like it has the thunder and like the war and the mountains, and then it shifts into like a recovery period almost. Like it was right after the line when these two people are talking, and the guy says, "Who is that third that walks behind you?" Kind of like who is like he knows that there's still like some thoughts in this person's head, and like he wants to know what thoughts are with him all the time. And then like right after that it goes into like war recovery period where you have like the environment returns, water returns, and then you have the city over the mountains. It's like finally reaching salvation after this war, and you have this unreal like city again, which I think you were gonna go more into that, like you said.
Yeah, so when it brings up the Unreal City, it pairs it along with other, like, past empires, which have seemed on the outside as prosperous, but internally collapsed due to, like, their internal problems. And I think the Unreal City is supposed to be seen as, like, a steampunk-esque future utopia that seems, like, really good on the inside, but is actually affecting the environment negatively due to like the pollution that it's spreading and the way that it's affecting the people inside the city.
Yeah, it's interesting that you said pollution because in the beginning of the poem, when if we go back to the river, it said that the river was clean, and then towards the end of the poem it says that it's like dirty and like polluted.
Yeah, I what it's trying to say with that is that war and just like humans in general are affecting the environment negatively, and like that we should probably make a change to how we're acting about the environment and just like in general as humans.
Yes. And then there's also lightning instead of thunder at the end too. So like, as we know, light is usually a symbol of hope. And so yeah, we have like this lightning, and then right after the lightning we have rain and like water is returning. And we know that like water is the change in society. So we like, so with the light and like the rain, we know like that war is recovering and society is like starting to shift a little bit.
I think the last just parts about the poem just gloss over the themes we've already discussed. And I think that just about wraps up the poem.
Yep. We actually have one more thing. The fisherman at the end.
Oh, yes.
He is standing in front of, like, an ocean. And as we know, like, water is hope and change. And behind him, it says that there's no...
It's a dry, barren wasteland.
Yeah, land with no water behind him. Like, that's in his past. And, like, that's always going to be in his past. And now he's facing this ocean of hope. Just, like, really powerful imagery.
Yeah.
So, and then it said in Italian, which we translated into, he had himself in fire that improves him. So, like, he's growing because of everything that he's been through. Like, this person, he's now facing hope and, like, a new start, kind of.
Now, we would read the poem, but I don't think we want this podcast to be an hour and a half long. So, we're just going to not...
Yeah, it's quite a long poem, but we hit pretty much like every part of it.
Yeah, so. As a quick review, some of the major themes are fate and how you can change it and affect it, PTSD after war, chess and like using pawns and trying to outsmart your opponent, which is like the mental turmoil and the woman's head in the story, hope, which is like the river and how it's like the way that the rapids are going on it kind of symbolizes like the path people are taking in life, self-growth, how the things you go through can shape how you are as a person, which can be related to the like the symbolism of things being behind people and how it's like the things that they've gone through in their life and how it affects them. And yeah, that's pretty much it for the poem.
Yep. So T.S. Eliot, he does his like I said before, his biggest thing is like self-discovery, or one of his major themes. And like throughout this poem, I think the biggest theme was that, but he also had like these smaller themes to like feed that bigger theme and really make it like powerful. All right, and now we're on to other famous poets of similar era and style.
Yeah, we got William Faulkner, which I really like. He won the Nobel Prize in Literature, and he won it for his unique contribution to the modern American novel, which is, like, basically saying he was a modernist, because he kind of changed the way that people see novels and literature as a whole. We have Virginia Woolf, who is regarded as one of the foremost modernist literary figures, and also wrote during World War One, and kind of talks about PTSD and how the war affects people. And Luigi Pirandello, who is a cool dude. Pretty cool dude.
And also a modernist.
Yeah, also writer. A modernist.
All right, and then the lasting legacy and influence on modern American poetry and what they're remembered for, we have... So Eliot is seen as one of the greatest modernist writers of all time. His classic poems still have relevant themes today, like, you know, becoming a better version of yourself. And his subtle symbols related to World War One help readers understand what life was like during his time period. And the time that he spent in Europe.
It's pretty hard, like, nowadays to try and comprehend what it was like to be, like, in a war and, like, the PTSD and the struggles of it. But just, like, poems, like, The Wasteland kind of helped me understand what it was like and, like, the struggles and the how they talk about how there's like corpses and ghosts behind your back, which is talking about the PTSD.
And I think there's like different like versions of PTSD depending on, like, yeah, we have the war version, which is most commonly known, but there's like, depending on your like own personal battles and things like that, like, I think he was able to relate to people because they also have like these, you know, internal things that they're going through. So like they can relate to the PTSD, like, oh yeah, like this is a deep subject, and like that way he was able to get his major theme across. Anyway, so he was also one of the first writers to express modern themes in his works, compared to like 19th century writers who stuck to less relevant themes. Eliot is also a renowned literary critic, as his ideas on important topics and pieces of literature were well respected.
Overall, T.S. Eliot is quite an amazing poet, a literary critique, and deserving of all the respect he gets nowadays. Poems might be a little hard to understand, but I think that's how he wanted them, because he wants like people to really think about what he's trying to say in his poems.
Yeah, and he gives you a lot of symbols and like literary devices throughout them. So if you just break it down, like we kind of just broke it down line by line, and we were able to like understand, I think, the gist of it.
Piece together little segments that kind of correlate with each other.
Yeah, how like section one relates to section five, like, and all that.
Well, I think we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for listening to the Lit Podcast. I hope you all enjoyed. This was Oliver and Jenna, and we'll see you next time.